Ladies and gentlemen, now it's time. Your host for this evening, live from Studio 76 in Valrico, Florida, Derek Old School Fournier.
So I give zero f-
Good evening, everybody. Good evening. This is Derek Old School Fournier coming live from Studio 76 right here in lovely Valrico, Florida. And you know, it's funny. I make fun of Valrico all the time, even though I really do love the little city that I've chosen to make my home. But I'm fresh off a trip to Charlotte. And while I'm going to give you some reports on Charlotte, not nearly as many updates as Mark Cook gives about Memphis or wherever the hell it was he went. But there may be more people in Valrico than there are in Charlotte. Not in the stadium, mind you. There were plenty of people in the stadium supporting their Panthers, and it was a great game day experience, which I'll tell you a little bit about as well. But for a city that is really pretty doggone cool, there was nothing going on in general, which was really surprising. So, at any rate, welcome to the broadcast. I am going to be talking about Buccaneer football because that's what we do here. Hopefully that's what you guys want to do as well. So we'll get you guys up to date as far as what's happening in the world of Buccaneers. There's going to be some discussion about draft, obviously, because, hell, we don't have anything to play for right now. I did a nice little interview with a friend, Amanda Lawson, and her Green Bay Packers podcast earlier tonight. I think that'll be published tomorrow. The Packers are coming to town, which means essentially this is a home game for Green Bay. I do think it's kind of funny that some of the media folks are acting like that's a surprise. We've already had three or four of those home games for our visiting teams. And that's not me kicking the shit out of our local fans, by the way, which I do on a regular basis. This is not that. The Packers fans travel. I'm quite certain there are some people out there who could have gotten some great deals for their tickets if they were willing to part with them for Green Bay Packers fans who are coming down here for a nice vacation, get out of those super cold weather from up north, and watch their Green Bay Packers have a chance to get into the playoffs. Bob Ripperton in the chat room thinks the pack may drop 50 on us. If you have an interesting gentleman's wager on that, sir, I will take it. So let me know. I am in the minority. I do not think the Packers are going to drop 50 on us. I do think there are some things to be mildly optimistic about, and that's not that I'm going to spread or be talking about rainbow and sunshine, because you guys know that's not my particular bent. It's not what I do. It's not what I enjoy doing. I also don't think it's very realistic. But the sky is falling. Blow this thing up. Fire Lovey Smith. Raise One Buck Place and build a new facility on non-haunted ground. Any of the other alarmist bullshit that's going on, I would like to try and dispense with as best we can. Though I realize that it can't be done. After 9 seasons, I've come to a really stark realization. Some folks just don't give a shit about data or facts or trends or any of that. And it's all opinion based on nothing. Now, I happen to have no respect for that. That's okay. You're allowed to have it. Everyone's allowed to have an opinion. Totally get that. It's freedom of speech and all that sort of stuff, right? But I don't have to have any fucking respect for it either. Now, that's okay too, right? Because you don't have to care if I respect your opinion. But my opinion is going to be based on data. It's not going to be based on just gut and heart and all those sorts of things. So we will have those conversations tonight. You guys know I'm always going to tell you what I think, and I'm always going to try and be respectful in general. But I got to tell you, the stupid has gotten incredibly fucking loud. And social media is an easy place for the stupid to spread. That is absolutely driving me nuts. But I went back and watched some film, and we're going to try and do some things tonight with the NFL replay stuff, because that was sort of fun. You guys seem to like that as well. There are some plays that I think are indicative of what's going on with the Buccaneers this year. And I wasn't able to do all the coaches' film breakdown. I only did the first half. But there are a couple plays I want to show you, and I want to show you how thin the line is between success and failure for our team. And I would posit that it is success and failure in the league, and it's very similar to any other sport, any other profession. That line is razor thin. And there are some really good examples that we'll go over tonight. But before we get much further into this preamble, I will let you know that Mark Cook of PewterReport.com fame, the editor-in-chief of PewterReport.com, will be joining us at about 9:30 this evening, assuming I'm logged into Skype, which I should be. It should be automatic, and it is. So we will expect Mark Cook to call in at about 9:30 and share some of his wisdom. They only move the headstones, says Twonson Pans. I don't know who you are, guest, but I like your name, and I like the Poltergeist reference because I'm old and I remember the movie Poltergeist. So first and foremost, shout out to our sponsors, without whom we would be so limited. I always wondered if chairs end up on tabletops on their own at One Buck Place. Is Christopher Oxentine. It could be haunted. I don't know. There was the Curse of Doug Williams, and that shit was real. And I don't believe in any of it, but it for real was real. Wing House of Tampa, our home away from home. We had our watch party there, our Christmas watch party last week. I was not there. I was in Charlotte. I was out at our tailgate this week. The pirate ship will be in the house. We have another announcement I'll be making in a second about the tailgate. But hopefully, if you're here, you're going to be there. It's 3316 West Ohio, right behind One Buck Place. Easy to find. Donation-driven. We should have a great time, and we encourage you guys to get out there. I don't have the full menu from Pat yet, but I think he's going to throw a different protein at you. Don't take that somewhere dark, you sick, sick people. Elder Ford of Tampa. If you don't know who Elder Ford of Tampa is, you haven't looked at a vehicle. They had their grand opening of their new showroom, and I have heard nothing but good things since then. You know, Terrell and Jeff and the whole team over there have been great to us, so thanks so much to those guys for their continued support of what we do at What the Buck, and we look forward to continuing to build that relationship. Steakhouse Elite, the home of Kobe Crafted Beef out of Oregon. That is what we serve at our tailgates for our burgers and hot dogs. If you haven't had it, you are missing out. Come to the tailgate and you can have it. The crew of Blackbeard's Revenge, the people responsible for our pirate ship, and so much more. Great to have that pirate crew with us, and we can't wait till pirate season or parade season to participate with you guys in Gasparilla. And last but not least, one of my companies, AFD Limited, that's American Football Development Limited, a company dedicated to spreading American football education abroad, starting in England and spreading out beyond there, or the United Kingdom. I hate to say England because apparently that's a poor vernacular. So at any rate, thank you to all of you guys for making these things possible. Another shout-out I have got to give is to the North Carolina Bucks fan group. Mark Witten and his team have a great fan group up there. As you know, I'm fortunate enough that I get to travel some of the time throughout the year. These are the vacations that I choose to take. I'm sick. Even when my team is playing like complete dog shit, I still travel to watch them play. And it's funny because the looks that I get in these various cities have ranged from shock to awe to hell. I don't know what the hell in the middle of all of that, but it's been an interesting range when I show up and they're like, oh, are you from Tampa? Yeah, I'm from Tampa. And you came up to watch the game? No, I came up to Charlotte just by happenstance. But at any rate, the North Carolina Bucks fan club, Mark Witten and his crew, have a great little tailgate down there. We went over there and hung out with them. Crazy showed up. Crazy had won the contest for car credit. Came in. We saw the team buses come by. He got all the way to the stadium, came back to the tailgate. Got a chance to meet those folks. Met a guy named Josh. Who wanted one of our What the Buck t-shirts. I brought one up there for him. He wanted to send a shout-out to Adrian Claiborne. He also has BPI, and Adrian's charitable foundation and work that he does for BPI was very much well-received by him. So it was cool to meet another fan and hear a little bit of his story as well. So those are the sort of housekeeping pieces and the thank yous to the sponsors, et cetera, that I think we needed to make sure we got taken care of. I do want to welcome the one, the only Bucks princess, Nikki. She is in town. I've seen her floating about town and taking pictures with various players at their shows. Seems like she's having a good time. She will be at the tailgate this week, so for any of you who are stalking her on Twitter, you can fumble and fuck up your words around her at the tailgate live and in person. We are still driving with Mama Claiborne to help Sack Hunger. This is the last collection spot before the Christmas delivery of goods, which is going to happen Monday at First Baptist Church of College Hill. So if you are going to bring some things to the tailgate, you know, tailgate is donation-driven. We recommend a $20 donation if you can. Anything more is always appreciated. But if you want to bring something as well for our drives, this is for the Sack Hunger campaign. We're trying to feed 50 families for Christmas. And by we, I mean the Claiborne family who we are helping directly. We do have a few shirts left. If you'd like to buy them, we'll have them with us. And the big surprise this week, you guys have wondered what we're going to do. We didn't have a live band this year because logistically they're challenging and we had all early games. And bands don't like getting up early because apparently they stay up late and potentially have many cocktails. But we met a young DJ at one of our members' birthday parties who was phenomenal. We spoke to this young man and said, hey, listen, we really enjoyed what you did. Is there any chance we could con you to coming out to a tailgate? We talked to him about a tailgate. And so instead of having a wonderful playlist that Buckshot, Kurt Creel, normally puts together our playlist, which is tremendous, but nothing really beats a live DJ putting stuff down. And so DJ Technique will be in the house, not just for this game, but for our final game of the season. We'll have that live. He'll be spinning from the top, from the flybridge on the pirate ship. So if you're out there, you're going to have a hell of a good experience. We're still expecting Kareem out there to do his song, but it should be a great time for everyone involved. Patches articles are out. Get them, read them, enjoy them. And that's housekeeping for you. So let's leap into some of this discussion. about the Bucks. I know that you guys, I see Skip in the chat room, and I've been using Skip sort of as my what is the word? Persona, my archetype. These are all big words I like to use because it makes me feel smart. For the draft crowd, right? And I don't mean to paint you with that brush, Skip, because you're more than that as a fan, and I know that. But you do represent sort of a group of fans that seem to be arguing vociferously for us to, quote-unquote, suck for the duck. I don't see Brian Dory in here. No, I don't. He may be one of the viewers who don't have a name. But there is certainly sort of this split in the fan base. And I'm not sure whether it's 50-50, 60-40. I don't know what the split is. But there's a group of people who feel like these games are meaningless. I know with Gerald going down with an injury again and then putting him on IR, we got a couple of guys who went to IR, including ASJ. There is no point to injuring guys in this season. I totally agree with that point. When you've got a guy like Gerald who's tweaked the knee not once but twice, this is crazy. Don't get him injured. Does that mean you sit everyone, you bench everyone, you coast? No. And I think that there's something to the integrity of the game that precludes you from doing this. And I know that that doesn't make anyone happy. And I know that there's a lot of discussion from a lot of really good media people. Justin Pawlowski, who I have a lot of respect for, does not feel like these games are important. He wants that number one pick, and he wants a quarterback. Now, I don't know why he's putting that position forward, because I haven't spoken to Justin directly. I know that sometimes many people have to put a position forward because, to be honest, people gravitate towards positions that support theirs. And right now, that's a very popular position. I've not known Justin to be that way in the past. I know that I saw Mark Ryan was on Bucks Brief with Fish last night. I didn't hear the interview. I haven't had a chance to go back and listen to the podcast. But essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, and Fish, if you have the direct quote, throw it in the chat room, and I'll get it out to the people that are in our chat room right now. He said that you are not a good fan, or you're a better fan if you want the team to lay down and get the draft pick because you see the quote-unquote big picture. And that's also a quote that I've heard and read Skip use before. So the first thing that I would want to put forth, and obviously these are my opinions because I'm the one on the mic. It doesn't make them fact. It makes them my opinions. I do not believe there is this thing called the big picture when it comes to losing to get a draft pick. Now, one of the things I'm going to do when I have time, which I have not yet, and if anyone has extra time, I know Jimmy Johnson doesn't have extra time. He's given me the data on the breakdowns of the games that we use from time to time. But that level of research needs to be done because I'd love to see the efficacy of getting the number one overall pick versus getting 2 through 5, say, and what the chances are, what the turnaround is, how many more wins that team netted the next season. And it would be very interesting for me to see if there's any sort of correlation between that draft pick position and wins. Now, here's where I'm going to blow your mind, because there's too many variables. None of that data will matter. If it supported my opinion and I put it forth, I'd have to call bullshit on myself. But what it speaks to is there isn't a single answer. And I was wrestling with this, actually, before the show, because I actually have a Twitter battle. It's not even Twitter battle with me. I was just I retweeted Benjamin Albright, who I think is pretty solid, about, and he was mentioning he doesn't understand what this preoccupation is with elite quarterbacks, right? Because you don't really need an elite quarterback to get to the Super Bowl. And he's in a battle now with a couple of people on my timeline, and I didn't mean to start a battle necessarily, but this is a topic of conversation, this concept of elite or franchise quarterbacks, which is very subjective. It's tough to determine what makes someone that, right? And so I started trying to think about these fans I have so much respect for who are in this camp, and it's just really, really fucking with my head because I don't get it. It's like the shiny new penny. And I went and I watched a compilation on ESPN of Mariota's top, I don't know, 15 highlights or whatever. You guys maybe saw it today because it was McShay's mock has us taking Mariota, and it had this compilation. And I think of the plays, 6 of them were runs or something, which I'm just not interested in. I'm not trying to draft a quarterback number one overall to run because let's just check things out, guys. Running quarterbacks don't last. I don't understand why this is still a battle. Oh, we got to run the spread. Okay, great. Until they get busted in the mouth and they stay in the pocket. Even the big ones like Cam Newton. This isn't really a debate. This really isn't a discussion. Do they need the ability to extend plays with their feet? Yes. Russell Wilson's done an amazing job at that. He really has. Now, he's paired with some decent offensive line, some good weapons up there. But he's done a good job of adjusting from a quarterback that runs with the ball to a quarterback that uses his feet to extend plays. And what you have to tag with that is a set of skill position players who understand that goddamn concept. And our guys don't. When you extend a play, the receivers have to get back to the quarterback and let them make a play. It is always better. And Peyton Manning, when I was in Denver a couple years ago, I watched Peyton Manning throw the ball a yard or something sideways to avoid a sack and gain 1 yard in the backfield. I still can't believe he did it. But great quarterbacks know that the most effective thing they can do is throw the ball. Now, sometimes they're not able to. Sometimes they've got to run the ball and do the best they can. Totally get that. Run the ball, get down, live to play another game. There are times where quarterbacks have to make those iconic plays. I remember the John Elway helicopter, the ones where, as fans, we get so excited about by seeing a quarterback lower their shoulder and try and bowl through a defensive back. And when it works, it's so awe-inspiring and it gets you so pumped up. And then those times when it doesn't work. When that quarterback who's supposed to lead your franchise tries to pretend he's a fullback and he ends up separating his shoulder. So while it's fun to talk about all these things with regards to that quarterback position, which is so important on a football team, I am not negating the importance of a quarterback on the football team. I'm not. It is more important, I think, to understand what the quarterback does and how you can do this thing that people, I think, really mean to say when they say franchise quarterback, which they mean consistent, present, very good, reliable quarterback, year on year. I don't need 1 year of great and then 1 year of shit. I don't need that. I don't need the Jay Cutlers of the world. So I'm going to throw that name out here because you guys saw that he got benched. Probably the last day he'll play in Chicago. Do I want him in Tampa? No, I've not liked Jay Cutler since Vanderbilt. I never have liked Jay Cutler. Does he have an immense amount of talent and the ability to throw the ball? Yes, I still don't like him. But there will be people who call for him here. There absolutely will be. Colin Kaepernick was the darling of the league. He's not this year. RG3, the darling of the league. He's not this year. Russell Wilson has put some stuff together. And that's great. And you've got to have guys who do that. People look to Peyton Manning's and Andrew Luck's and Tom Brady's and Drew Brees's. Drew Brees tore his rotator cuff. He was a free agent. The Saints took a chance on him. We wanted to take a chance on him. It worked out. He came back from the injury. He's been tremendous. I sat in the stands with his fans who booed him when he almost lost to the Buccaneers. So the thing I'm trying to counsel here, guys, is a little bit of perspective. And that may not be fun, and it may not support what you want. But I honestly, in my heart of hearts, believe it to be true. Our window has gotten so narrow for evaluation. The Twitter world has taken over, and we want everything in 140 characters. We want to view everything through a window this large. And you just can't do that. Not successfully. So before you start thinking, and I was told on Twitter this weekend that I'm an idiot because I don't just want to take either Marcus Mariota or James Winston. If you don't want one of those guys, you're an idiot, is what I was told on Twitter. And I confirmed. I wanted to clarify. So anyone who doesn't want one of those two guys, if they're in the top one or two picks, is an idiot. Yes, that was the answer. I don't think that's true. I think that a team has to build with a lot of groceries, not one grocery. And when I look at these guys, now I'm going to continue to evaluate them and look at them, but nothing I have seen makes me think that these guys will translate to the next greatest quarterback to ever play this position. I don't think that they're a no-brainer. I just don't. Either one of them. Are they talented? Yes. Absolutely. Was I moved by Mariota's speech? Yes. Absolutely. Seems like a great kid. Maybe he'll be a good pro. I hope he is. I hope both of them end up being good pros. We need more good quarterbacks. We do. If I have an opportunity to amass picks and shore up an offensive line, would I take that instead? Yeah, I would. I can guarantee you that I would. And I know that that would not be popular. I totally know that. I'm sorry, guys. I have to just scroll in the chat room. For some reason, the chat room hung. Christopher Oxentine says Randall Cunningham became a pocket passer. It happens, right? You get punched in the mouth, it happens. We're going to see them trade back and pick up more picks. We don't have the depth. Ton of options, in my opinion, says Rippert, and I agree. What do you think the biggest targets in free agency? I'll have to look at that. I usually don't look forward that much until we get to that point. And you know, maybe that's a tool that I use to stay focused on this season. And I know that, and I think someone in the chat room earlier said that people want to look at the new thing, the thing that they can get excited about. And I get that. I mean, there's excitement. I think Kurt's actually going to the draft, which would be so cool. I've not done that. And that would be really cool to be at. I totally think that's a neat trip. But because I'm not a huge college football guy, it's not like I've got a list of guys that I think we've got to go get. Jimmy Johnson in the chat room. Or actually, Calico Jack first. I take the guy who is compared to J.J. Watt and G-Mac. He wants defense, right? Calico Jack's going defense. And this is the part about our fan base. And I use fan base, and I'm speaking about What the Buck listeners, that sort of group. Fan base is probably the wrong word. Listeners is probably a better word. I don't mean to imply you guys are fans or anything like that. It's great that we get to share football, which I happen to take an immense amount of joy out of. And in some ways, some of that joy has been stolen because things have been so bad. And I'm sure you guys feel the same way. It's not fun to watch your team get kicked in the fucking mouth all the time. It just isn't. But when I hear people start talking about this, and I don't have to agree with Calico Jack, who's extremely smart, and say, oh, defense, defense, defense. I think defense is smart. I think there's a lot of really good decisions that aren't quarterback this draft. I just don't see that person who's head and shoulders above. And I know people said, well, if they don't do that, people are going to stop buying tickets. And I want to make sure I go on record, if you guys don't understand this, zero fucks given about people buying tickets based on that. If you don't want to come to the game, that's totally fine. Am I going to call your fan card out? No. If you've been spending money on the Bucks, if you watch the Bucks, if you listen to them on the radio, then you're a fan. I'm not going to say I'm a better fan or a worse fan. Fans are fans are fans. They really are. But if the decision on quarterback or not is the thing that puts you over the edge, man, I just got to question some shit. I was talking to another fan of another team when I was in the bar in Charlotte, and he was like, oh, we need a new owner. I think he was talking about the Bills. No, it wasn't the Bills, because the Bills have a good owner. I can't remember what it was, but they want a new owner. I said, you know, the funny thing about fans asking for a new owner is there's an easy way to get a new owner. Go become a billionaire and buy the team. You don't just get to get a new owner. Doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. But some of the words that I came up with when I was trying to sort of rationalize this were perspective, hopes, and dreams. People want something that makes them think that one thing is going to be different. Now, I hope some of the film we watch tonight, after Mark Cook calls in at about 9:30, and we watch some of these plays, the difference is so small. Now, Drew Hamilton in the chat room says, Bucks have had a hard time finding, as hard a time finding a defensive end as they've had finding a QB over the last decade. Fans are acting like QB is a crapshoot, but finding an offensive lineman or defensive lineman is easy pickings. Drew, we have data that tells us that offensive lineman and defensive lineman are easily two or three times easier to find in the first round of the draft when we evaluated the first round drafts over the last, whatever, 15 years. They're not a lock. Totally agree they're not a lock. But they're a lot better chance. They're a much higher probability. That's the difference, especially on the offensive line. But you're right. The draft is a crapshoot, and it's always better to use tape, right? That's why free agency is so good, because if you use free agency, you have lots of tape against other pros. You can compare contrast. And we went out and spent a lot of money on some guys who are supposed to be really good free agents. And they came here, and they played like dog shit. So it's not all about tape, as much as I love to think it is. Man, my analytical side definitely, definitely wants to believe it. Drew, you can pull out losers. I'm not saying you can't, brother. We can pull out losers all day long in every position. But I forgot what the stat was. I think it was guards taking the first round were 86% likely to start all games or whatever. I can't remember. This is the tough part is what's success, right? We start doing the evaluation and saying who's a franchise quarterback, and that's so subjective. Who's a quarterback that makes it to the playoffs? You make it to the Super Bowl? What is it that makes a quarterback successful? And it becomes even harder when you're talking about an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman, because you've got to try and characterize what success is and build a heuristic that allows you to go out there and figure out what you can project to be success and try and make it as data-based as you can. Sure, there are going to be intangibles, heart, leadership, character. These sorts of things are important. But you've got to be able to do something to do the evaluation. But your point is a good one, right? I'm not telling you that that's not true. I'm just saying if you're hedging, if you're trying to build a bet, I just think it's a better bet. And I jokingly say to go after the fat guys. Calico Jack's right. There are more of them on the field. You have a better chance. If I draft an offensive lineman, we can move offensive linemen around. Maybe he was a tackle in college, but he's better suited as a guard here. We got a little bit of flexibility. Quarterback better damn well come in and be able to do some important things. They're going to touch the ball on every offensive snap. Unless, of course, you implement the wildcat. Because that was the future of football. Remember that? The future of football, ladies and gentlemen. Jimmy Johnson says, some of the problem comes when a team lacks continuity. It is consistently changing coaches, scouts, GM schemes, and lack a true plan and developmental process to put players in positions to succeed. Now, this is an important concept because you talk about scheme. When you talk about who we're going to draft, we have to look no further than who they bring in as the offensive coordinator to replace Jeff Tedford. That's going to be a conversation that I think will be a lot of fun because that will tip our cap. It'll tip our hand. We will let people know. If we bring in someone who is a spread guy, someone who's got lineage back there, then I think there's a really decent chance that we're going to go after Marcus Mariota. Now, does that mean we have to? No, there are other quarterbacks that play in that system. It's very popular. Very popular. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that system. Mind you, I don't want to make you guys think that I hate the spread. I don't. There's a time and a place for everything. And I think what Chip Kelly has done with space is really important. There's a lot of math behind what Chip Kelly does. There are problems that are inherent with it as well, not the least of which being conditioning. But very, very cool. Riverton wants to know if you can replace someone who's never here. You can replace someone who was on the org chart. Yeah. Right, he architected this system that Marcus Arroyo is trying to then work through. It's no different than when Jagodzinski's was replaced. Right, you start implementing. Now, apparently Jagodzinski's playbook was so small it didn't matter. But when you start down that path and you go down a scheme, we talked about this a little bit with regards to the offensive line. If everything is based on spreading the field and using zone blocking, and you can't zone block and get the running game established, the rest of these dominoes don't fall. And like I said, we're going to look at some tape after Mark calls in about, because we talked about this before, and I showed you some video of what zone blocking looks like, and we talked about the fundamentals of zone blocking versus man blocking. There's a play early, very early, where Doug Martin springs for a nice long run. They did everything right on that play. Everyone. Great blocking, great flow, second-level blocks. Doug sprung it. Wish he could have gotten the end zone, but that's okay. We still got in there. Great throw, great catch by Mike Evans. Terrific opening. There's a play a little bit later in the game that I'll show you that looks strikingly similar. But it speaks to how critical everyone's role is when you're team blocking. You have got to get your assignment right. Because the difference between a 5-yard play and a 70-yard play can be one guy. One guy. So we'll talk about that as well. The milk carton is still out for Michael Johnson. Here is Chicago with Jay Cutler making a bajillion dollars, and they're willing to bench him. But Michael Johnson, who managed to get on the stat sheet this week, I saw him get a tackle, but I think the guy actually ran into him. Probably a really nice guy. Seems like a nice enough guy. I know Steve White, when he's been on here, has said a couple things. He mentioned that Michael needs to just run his bull rush, and he did once and almost threw the damn tackle into the quarterback. I didn't see him running again in the first half, which speaks again to what Steve was saying. But the right end, on the very first play of the game, he bites so hard on the flow right that he's 6 yards past the play by the time the reverse, or it's not a reverse, but the toss sweep goes around that goes for a big gain. His job is contained on that edge. What the fuck are you doing? His angle was so bad, it was painful. There's another play later where he's so slow off the ball that he tries to emulate a tech stunt and just sort of wanders around. It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. Quote from Lovey today, what he thinks about the great QBs have. I just think more than anything, you judge a great quarterback on decision-making, mobility in the pocket. Did I say decision-making? Make all of the throws, great leader, just overall play at the quarterback. So that's a good quote from Lovey, but it's very generic, as you'd expect. Lovey doesn't get into specifics often. That is not because he is stupid, mind you. It's because he doesn't owe anyone specifics. Lovey is a seasoned coach. He is going to tell you what he wants to tell you. That's why when he comes out and says EDS is a really good guy, a good team leader, all those sorts of things, those are all true. That's not saying that EDS is playing good football right now. And I can't remember. Someone can find, there was a headline on Joe Bucks Fan, I think, today, talking about how he was supporting EDS. And I went and clicked on it because I was like, oh, my God, no way. But the quote wasn't about that at all. It was about him as a free agent acquisition, a good guy, good team leader, all those things. I believe all those things to be true. I like everything the guy says. You just, as a center, again, we talk about job descriptions. One of the things you've got to do is be able to snap the ball. That's one of those sort of non-negotiable things when it comes to being a center in the NFL. Now, what is going on here? Let me message Mr. Cook and see if he is running late. You guys, be thinking about your swords and skulls for this week, as well as the predictive MVPs for the Packers game. We will still do those kind of old things as we talk more and more about the upcoming game. I should have a standing reminder for Mark. But I know his son's not feeling well, so he's taking care of him at home. So we'll give give old Cookie a little bit of a break on that one. EDS beard is quite impressive right now. Yeah, if only the beard helped him block anybody. That would be something different. Things to be positive about before Mark calls in, and we'll transition back and forth between these things once Mark does call in. I wrote one thing, or I typed one thing in my. I have a little outline here that I go by. You guys know that. I try and do some show prep. I know a lot of people don't do that, but I try. I think that the defense is slowly but surely getting better. I mean, we're playing with guys that no one knows, and they're still getting better. Schematically, I think we were taking some risks because of the lack of production, partially due to injury in the front four. We're having to take some risks. I think that in Jimmy's data from this week, we blitzed twice as much this week as we did last week. I don't think that's a vestige of Derek Anderson and trying to go after him specifically. I think it's more a vestige of having to manufacture some pressure. There's Mark. Mr. Cook.
What's happening, brother?
Hey there. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well.
Well, it's good to have you on the show. I just messaged you over there on Facebook to make sure you were all well and good. How's your boy doing?
He's getting over it. I mean, he probably could have went to school today. Probably should have made him, but anyway, he didn't. He's better. He's going tomorrow. He's mad, but oh well, that's life.
It's almost Christmas break, man. Give him a break. It's fine.
Well, I mean, he's already missed 3 days. So here's the fun part. Now he gets to spend his Christmas break making up 3 days worth of work, so... So I told him, I said, if you don't go to school the next 2 days, then you're gonna have 5 days worth of homework to make up over Christmas break. So
Mark the Hammer Cook.
Got to be mean.
I like it. All right. Well, Mark Cook from PewterReport.com. Everyone knows who you are, the ginger badass, he himself. I came back from Charlotte after watching our team lose again. I know that you are close to the team. You have your fingers on the figurative pulse of this team. What is the sentiment in the locker room? Are they as depressed, dejected, sad, angry, disgusted, any of those sort of modifiers that fans can come up with as we are?
You know, it's as I've mentioned before, I don't know. I mean, no. I mean, I've seen worse locker rooms, and I've seen worse locker rooms with better records at this point. Going back to 2011, that 4-12 team that started the season off 4-2, I believe, and went on the 10-game losing streak. Shiano's team started off, 6-4 at one point, ended up 7-9, and then last year they started 0-8. And but see, they were going on the upswing on those last eight games, at least. I mean, they split down the back nine, or the back eight, I guess you could say, going 4-4. So, you know, it's hard to say with this group of guys. I mean, you know, listen, I've heard privately from some people that the players really believe in what's going on, and they really think that they're pretty close. And, you know, I don't know how accurate that is, but I've heard that from somebody that would definitely know. you know, that's something that I don't know that we saw entirely last year, and something we didn't see in Raheem's last year. Because in that 10-game losing streak, I mean, guys were done. I mean, they had packed up. Go back to that Jacksonville game near the end. I mean, they go up 14-0, ended up losing 41-14. They were done at that point. You know, these guys keep fighting. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They continue to play fairly competitive football. They got out-talented and out-coached and everything in Detroit a couple weeks ago. But, you know, they're not a far-off team talent level from a team like the Saints or the Panthers or even the Falcons, for that matter. But
just compared them to the other three worst teams in the league.
Well, you're right. I mean, I'm comparing them to three not great football teams right now. but I mean,
Jacksonville narrowly avoided that one. But
well, yeah, you know, and I still say it could be worse. I still say that, you know, you could be a Raiders fan, although there's some You know, people, yeah, but they don't have a coach. They don't know what's going to happen next year. You know, you could be a Cleveland Browns fan where they tease you, and then you bring in Johnny Football, and he's terrible.
Now, wait
and
a minute.
So you don't
Hold
know
on.
Where the future is there.
Mark, I've got to interrupt you there.
Yeah.
Johnny Football was to be the salvation of Cleveland football.
Yes.
He is the future and the light.
They better hope so. Or Cleveland will continue to be a dysfunctional organization. You know, he's got to do it. And after last week's, it's terrible because I went out on a limb and told somebody, you know, I thought he was going to come out and look really, really good last week. You know, division game, fighting for the, a playoff spot. And, he's been sitting on the bench for 12 weeks. This was going to be his coming out party. And boy, was I completely wrong in that. He looked absolutely dreadful. But, the bottom line is I don't know if it's good or bad that this team is not throwing stuff against the walls. I think honestly, Derek, now that I say this, I think they're more shocked than anything. I don't think anybody, including the fans, expected this team to be 2-12 at this point.
No.
And including everybody in that locker room. I think they all assumed that they were going to be at minimum a 500 team, right? I mean, I think we all were hoping for a 7-9, 8-8, maybe sneak a 9-7 in there. And if they would have done that, they won the division by 3 games. But bottom line is, they can't figure out a way to win these close football games. Fifth halftime lead they've blown this year, I think. And at least 4 fourth quarter leads that they've blown this year. So, I don't know what the problem is there. And I think it's bewildering to Lovie Smith and the coaching staff and Jason Light and even the players. And, it's easy to point to Josh McCown. It's easy to point Gerald McCoy, went out early in that game. It's easy to point at, some backup guys in the secondary, some people that nobody knew of, like a Bradley McDougal before the season started. Now he's starting at safety. There's a lot of...
You mean the guy that led the team in tackles this week?
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? And I like Bradley a lot, and I think he's going to be a pretty good football player for this team. If your safety's leading your team in tackles,
that's
never
up.
A good thing.
You
unless
done
his
messed
name's
up.
Don Lynch, and he's playing basically a linebacker position.
Now, what's
Bradley
funny about
McDougal
that?
Was not playing a linebacker position. He was playing deep secondary, and he made a lot of tackles because there were a lot of balls completed in front of him.
So what's funny about that, though, is let's talk about that. When I was on the show earlier for Green Bay, we were talking about that, and I thought my recollection was correct. Do you remember the length of the scoring drive, the touchdown scoring drive for the Panthers?
The 4-yarder?
The monstrous 4-yard
right,
drive?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Listen, if my defense is able to hold you to field goals, we better damn well do something.
See, that's where I completely disagree with you. I know that you and I think maybe it was you and Steve right after the game said you can't put this on the defense, and I do agree with that.
Hell no,
I mean,
you can't.
You 12 points is 12 points, but 390 yards to a Derek Anderson-led offense with one of your running backs not there, and a rookie wide receiver going over 100 yards, and Greg Olsen, who you knew exploited you in week one, that's all you can do, still give him another 100-yard game?
Hold on, Mark, I'm checking the box score to see where yards against actually shows up. Oh, wait, it doesn't on the score. It doesn't.
Well, but here's the deal, Derek. 390 yards, 16 minutes, of possession time in favor of because you can't get off the field in the first half,
right.
Limits your offense's opportunity. I mean, Josh McCown threw 4 passes in the first quarter. I mean, there just wasn't a lot of opportunities. Look, I agree. Scoring defense ultimately is what matters, but you can't say that 390 yards to Derek Anderson is an acceptable defensive performance in my position.
No, saying these guys are the steel curtain. What I'm saying is, if you're not letting them get in the end zone, you're bending and not breaking, and that's what you've got to get to that point.
And that's what this defense did a lot. People forget about. I go back and watch a lot of, old games from the 90s and things like that. And,
you do.
And, there were a lot of things that used to frustrate me when I was just a regular fan back then watching this football team. And third down conversions were one of those things. Between the 20s and the 20s, there was yardage given up. But we knew they were going to tighten up down in the red zone, and that's what we saw last week, and that's what you've got to do. But I think that was more, I can't say more, it was Derek Anderson playing crappy in the red zone, because he missed some guys, certainly, than the defense playing well. Bottom line is, 12 points, okay, let's take the touchdown off the board. Yes, 4 field goals, and that's what you've got to do to win in this football game. And scoring 17 points is not going to win many games in the NFL anymore. You better have that 2002 Buccaneer defense. You better have that steel curtain defense if your offense is only going to put up 17 points, or you're going to be a 2-12 football team.
I totally agree. And like I said, I wasn't trying to exonerate the defense by any stretch. What I was saying is when you're looking at the things to go raise hell about, I don't think that's the first thing you raise, especially when you look at the guys, and you already said this, look at the guys who are playing on that defense right now.
Right, right. No, I agree. No, I've noted their improvement, you know, and every time you note their improvement, everyone says, well, they're playing against crappy quarterbacks. and so let's see this week the true improvement. Let's see the next 2 weeks what the defense is able to do in these next two games.
Yep, absolutely.
You hold the Packers to 19 points, and I'll be singing your praises all off season, no matter what happens in that Saints game.
Because I have a feeling
Aaron Rodgers is going to come in here and light that stadium up. I'm concerned that that's going to happen anyway.
And anyone in their right mind should be. Aaron Rodgers is a stud. He's got stud skill position guys. They came off of an ass whipping. Well, not really, but a beating by the Bills that no one expected. They're in a playoff hunt. They're playing for a future. This is a team that should come in here and try and stomp a mud hole in us and they'll have 60% of the stadium as Packer fans.
Right, right, right. And you know what? Here's the thing, too. Not only are they a talented football team, they're an experienced football team.
Yep.
Aaron Rodgers is a master tactician, right? I mean, he throws darts. And I was looking at some of those balls where Olsen was getting open between when he would run some, middle routes and then head to the sideline, between cornerbacks and between the safeties and the linebackers were dropping into their deep coverage. I mean, there were holes all over that field, right? And there's going to be when you play zone coverage. But a guy like Aaron Rodgers, I mean, if Derek Anderson's throwing for 270 yards, last week I think Aaron Rodgers would have threw for 370, if not more. I mean, there were some throws that were missed, but, they can just pick that zone apart. And what I'm saying is the experience of the Packers offense, of the coaching staff, and of Aaron Rodgers doesn't bode well for an inexperienced team still trying to get their firm grasp on this defense. Now, let me just bring this up and interrupt you even more. They played the Lions last week, and it made me think, and again, I'm not saying I would rather have Jim Caldwell over Lovie Smith, but, boy, wasn't that the talk, one of the reasons why the Glazers struck early with Lovie Smith, was because Detroit was maybe interested in bringing him in, and Lovie didn't go to Detroit and interviewed, he just interviewed in Tampa and stuck with Tampa Bay. They've had no problems, and again, I don't know what their coaching staff shakeup was, but I would imagine they're running Caldwell's style of defense and his philosophy, and they've had no problem picking up, the scheme. And again, talent level, you can look at that, but...
Ziggy Ansah, Ndamukong Suh, Levy, I think they've got some guys that are playing at a high level and have been healthy for a lot of the year.
That's a big part of it. But there's also before last week's game, they were the number one ranked defense in the National Football League.
Mm-hmm.
We keep making excuses, and I think we do. I think we do. We keep saying, well, it's new and it takes a while. It hasn't taken every new coaching staff team a while to catch on or to perform better in it. Maybe the Lions don't know that defense perfectly well, but they sure as hell are playing a hell of a lot better in it than the Buccaneers are in their defense.
Yep. No, that's true. I don't know that that's an indictment of Coach Smith, Coach Frazier, the whole lot. I don't know who it's an indictment of.
Be Jason Light. It could be Mark Dominick. I mean, it could be Greg Schiano. There's a lot of people that you could look at when you want to say, why is this team 2-12?
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of blame to go around, certainly.
Absolutely.
Now speaking of blame, I have to ask a question. We just we didn't get word. Like, I didn't get a teletype or whatever they called them in the old days. But there was an announcement made that the Bears may have benched Jay Cutler and his $15 trillion he's going to make this year, which is a pretty big balls move for a coach. Now, here in Tampa, we've got a guy who's a big money guy who hasn't played well all year. Every time they put in random backup at right defensive end, we have better contain, better consistency, better play. And yet this guy continues to be on the starting lineup. Is there any chance we will see Mr. Johnson sat in favor of anyone?
I'm really surprised because, listen, let's be honest. Anthony Collins, yeah, he had a bit of an injury, but he was a healthy scratch last week.
Mm-hmm.
They made that move, flipping Demar Dotson over there because they weren't happy with his play. And
that's a shock to him. I don't know if you saw his tweets or whatever, but he's not aware of that.
Well, I mean, it's something that I don't know that you and I have said. I think we've said privately, it's certainly something the Buccaneers should explore because DeMar did play that position, and I know it was preseason, but he didn't give up a sack in those four preseason games that he played 2 years ago when Donald Penn was nursing I'm doing air quotes here, a pulled calf muscle from working out, which was actually an injury he got playing basketball right before training camp. But
that basketball, boy, basketball is the end of so many good seasons.
But Connor Barth, who, boy, sure has turned out well for him, though, man. Hey, how about getting cut by the Bucks, and now you're potentially going to the Super Bowl and you're 10-for-10 on the season, kicking in Mile High Stadium.
We got lots of guys that we cut and go on to do good things.
Yes, but you know what, and that's true. And but you take a look at a guy like Jacquees Smith. Here's a guy that's bounced around Danny Lansana. It happens to all teams.
Sure does.
You know what I mean? And the Buccaneers find these guys occasionally, too. I mean, Donald Penn was a guy that was on the practice squad. You know, while we tend to, and I'm bad about doing it too, well, look at what this guy's doing. We don't always turn around and look at some of the guys that this team has brought in that other teams have given up on. You know what I mean? And sometimes it just is a change of scenery type thing that'll help guys out. But going back to your original question, Michael Johnson, I don't know that he'll be benched. But, you know, I think they're just so thin right now on that defensive line that it would kind of be hard to. I mean, I guess you could start. You could start English, or you could start Jacquees on that side. You could put Golson on the other side. I don't think Golson's gonna be able to plug in at that right defensive end. I mean, he's pretty much practiced and stayed on that left side. And knocking aptitude
right now,
those kind of things. He's a young guy, and that's not an easy thing for him to do.
Right now, if you can't be stout against the run, if you can't keep edge, and you can't get quarterback pressure, then having you on the field is like having a blocking dummy out there. I don't get it. But
you know what it is? It's the guy who buys the. You're not sponsored by Range Rover, are you?
No, not yet. Okay. Do you know someone? We could talk to him.
No. Car R.
Okay.
And guy goes out and buys the $120,000 car R because he's always wanted one, and it's a status symbol. But historically, it's been kind of a piece of junk, right? But he continues to pour money into it because that's his baby, in a sense. And I don't know if that's a good analogy or a bad analogy, but he's the high-priced car in the garage that you keep thinking, boy, just one more tune-up, right? One more adjustment on the engine. I'll change the spark plugs. Maybe it's a distributor, just a little tweak here, and this son of a gun is going to be humming at 100 miles an hour. And they've tried everything they can, and it's just not working. And to me, that at some point you cut your losses and you move on and you take a loss. And that's what happens in business every day, whether it's in the corporate world or in the NFL or really any sporting world. Sometimes you just got to say it just isn't working. For whatever reason, it's not going to work out here. At this point, though, Derek, when you're 2-12, does it matter? I mean, I say that at the same time, because why isn't Kevin Pamphil playing more? Why are a couple of these other younger guys? So, we talk about it, but yet they're not doing it. So I guess it does matter.
Well, what's funny is, I mean, there's all this conversation, and I'm going to get to this set of questions, obviously, because this is what fans are asking about, and it's a fair set of questions to ask with regards to, should we throw these games kind of thing or whatever? What should we be using these games for? And I think at this point, you've got to use them, if nothing else, for evaluation. And so, yes, why aren't these guys getting burned? That's when we had the discussion earlier,
right,
when Josh was healthy enough to come back and the season looked like it was going to the shitter anyway. The question becomes, if you really want to know if Glennon is your future quarterback, let him play. Let him get the burn.
Yeah, but I don't – here's the thing. I don't think they think Glennon is their future quarterback.
I don't think they do either. I agree. I think
here's the second part of that, and you know this from being a football coach. There is nothing in the fiber of Lovie Smith – or any of his coaching staff that ever wants to evaluate past game four of the preseason. It's about one thing and one thing only, and it's about winning. It's what he started doing when he was hired in January, from the first day he went upstairs, unpacked his stuff, and started watching film. And to concede at any point, whether you're 1-5 or 1-14, or 2-12 at this point, whatever your record may be, it's hard to concede. And I just don't think, as a football coach, it's, now here's where maybe ownership, and I'm not saying the Glazers, it could be any ownership. It may be the Raiders ownership. It could be Cleveland. You say, okay, listen, you're safe. Your job's safe. Let's see what we have with these young guys. But to ask a coach to evaluate on his own when he's on, and I'm not saying he's on shaky ground, but you're never safe if you finish a football season 2-14. I mean, I think he's fine, But it would not shock me that December 29th we come down and get the press release. You know what I mean? It could happen. It absolutely could happen. Now, I'd say it's 75-85% chance that it won't, but you just never know. And so, I mean, to go out there knowing that you have a guy that you're not convinced is the best guy, I don't think there's any football coach out there that really wants to do that. I wouldn't want to do that. And as a fan, you know, because there's no guarantee Mariota, Winston, Gregory, Amari Cooper, any of these guys are going to be studs. You just don't know. So I would never want my team to tank just for a draft pick.
One of the things that is supposed to be beautiful and that I find beautiful about sports, I get all goofy about it because it really does, it's at the core of why I love these games, mm-hmm. is they are supposed to be a meritocracy. The best guy plays.
Right.
Right. It doesn't matter your name, any of that shit. It's
right.
about what you are what you put on film.
Right.
Right. And so for that matter, if you can bench Collins, Hal Johnson's playing is absolutely beyond. And I don't mean to single Michael out. He's probably a great guy, but he's playing like dog shit right now. He should not be getting these reps. I don't care if you put T.J. Fitinicum in there. I don't care who you put in.
Right.
If someone's going to go out there and bust their ass, I want that guy in there, not Johnson roaming about doing nothing. But let's move on with the number one overall pick
one
in the draft.
Thing,
oh,
number
yeah.
50 last year. I mean, there's a perfect example of it. Greg Schiano was one of those guys. And, again, I don't know. We don't know. You know, what goes on, when they're on the practice field, the study habits or these kind of things. And we don't know what the coaches specifically are looking at on film. We can see what we see from the stands or the television. But, you know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt to a degree to Lovie Smith and his staff or Joe Cullen. But here's the deal. They've got to make a big determination because if they cut Michael Johnson, they're going to be looking at around $9 million of dead cap money next year. That's a big move to make. If you bench the guy the last 3 weeks of the year, in a sense, you're saying we're done with you. And from, you know, as we know, football players, some of them, depending on, you know, have to be coddled to a degree. I mean, I'm not saying Michael Johnson, but there are players, for instance, if you shut them down like that, mentally they're done. You know, a guy like Daquan Bowers is not a mentally tough guy, right? There are plenty of football players we've seen. But going back to what I was saying with Schiano, I mean, Teo Neisom is a guy who clearly was not the most talented guy on that defensive line, but he busted his ass and he did those things that you look for in practice, in the meetings, and those kind of things. And he was rewarded. Now, that may have hurt the Buccaneers. I don't know. Maybe Daquan would have been better if he would have been playing in those games. Maybe he would have doubled the sack total, and it would have been hard last year for number 50. But you understand what I'm saying. I mean,
yep.
You know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. That's okay. And I think we could talk for hours on this kind of a concept because I don't think you can build for next week. I don't think you can build for next quarter. I think you mm-hmm. have to build for the next 3 years. And if you establish a culture that the best guy plays, that you will earn your burn,
right.
then players will play for you because they understand. I can't just come in here with a great resume. I can't just come in here with a highlight reel.
Right.
Because if I come in here and shit the bed, I'm going to be riding the pine. And I can guarantee you with this ankle crap that Johnson's had all year, someone smart could have got an injury settlement on this thing. And that pisses me off because
right.
that's front office related and someone should have been thinking about it. But
I still think they're holding on to that thread of hope.
Whew.
That, you know, it's going to flip. The switch is going to flip. And you know, it's quite clear to most of us that it's probably not. And I'm sure it's clear to them it's probably not going to happen this year. But, you know, it's just one of those, it's a pride thing to a degree. But anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. The fans are already turning their guns towards the draft. You hear it, I'm sure, at thepewterreport.com, message boards, the largest
so
message boards in the interwebs.
I'm so mad this draft has been moved to May because, I mean, that's another extra month and a half, month we have to talk about it. Oh, my head's already hurting from it. But anyway, it's good. And if they end up with the number one draft pick, boy, it's good. I mean, you know, people are going to be just... you know, it's all the talk is going to be is draft talk, but it at least gives us something to do in the offseason, so I can't complain that much.
Well, I will check out during that, but for tonight, I have to put you on the spot as the expert, the resident expert on the Buccaneers. I mean, you are the foremost periodical covering the Buccaneers, dedicated to the Buccaneers, and you are the editor-in-chief. With the number one overall pick in the draft, the Buccaneers select.
The Buccaneers have traded the first pick to the Philadelphia Eagles for this year's number one, next year's number one, this year's number two, and next year's number two.
Are you making that shit up, or are you saying we could really get two ones and two twos for this? Because they would like Mariota that much. Are you just fucking with me?
And here's the problem. and everybody wants to know in November and December who the team's going to draft.
Yeah.
The evaluation process, I mean, you've got regional scouts doing their job one of these college games, but Jason Light is concerned about who can I find off the street to replace, you know, here this guy or this guy. You know, I mean, certainly he started draft stuff, but it doesn't. So when the season ends, that's when it kicks into high gear. So between now and May, when the draft happens, again, let's go back and look at last year this time. Before the East-West Shrine Game, I would venture to say, myself included, Scott Reynolds included, Eric Delarada included, and Derek Fournier included, nobody knew who Jimmy Garoppolo was, right? You may have heard
Correct.
Him in passing, watching ESPN 9, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, and some lame conference game is on from where he
some
played,
bullshit
right?
Pac-12 game was on. You caught a sorry.
Well, and so then. And Johnny Manziel, right? I mean, who's gonna finish worst and have the number one draft pick to take Johnny Manziel, right? And Blake Bortles is another guy that continued to shoot up the charts last year as the college season continued to go. You know, he got better. But at the beginning of the year, I don't think many people expected. At the beginning of the college football season last year, in other words, no one expected Blake Bortles to be the first quarterback taken in the draft. So a lot is going to change between now and May. So, you know, these mock drafts I saw one day had Mariota going one, Winston two. Listen, Winston could easily take a Johnny Manziel tumble, right, down to the mid-20s. I mean, that's not out of the thought at all. Mariota could potentially drop, you know, out of the top five when people start. I mean, I don't think he will, but all I'm saying is we don't know what's going to happen between now and then, because when the season ends is when it all begins, when you have the All-Star games, when you have the opportunity in Mobile to meet. And that's a big deal up there, because all the NFL GMs and scouts, blah, 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 they interview these guys. They take them to the hotel room. They got an interview room set up. They interrogate all these guys for however long, 10 minutes to an hour, depending on how long, you know, how interested they are. And then they bring them in for private visits. They're allowed a certain number of private visits every year, so they fly these guys in. And then, of course, there's the combine in February. So, I mean, there's so many things that are going to happen, and a lot of it is going to be based on, you know, yes, majority of it's based on tape, right? But I can't say that Jason Light or Jerry Jones or any other general manager in the league has watched every single play of Marcus Mariota yet, or Jameis Winston, or somebody else that may be coming out of the college ranks. They just haven't had that opportunity yet. But it will start, and it'll start and get real heavy in January. But it's impossible to even begin to guess now. Now, what you said about Mariota. If he stays where a lot of people are projecting to be that first or second quarterback taken, but if the Buccaneers do end up with that number one, and the number one is key over the number two, in my opinion, because then a team like the Eagles, and I'm just using them as an example and speculating, I don't have any inside information, but if Chip Kelly decides this is how I'm going to win a Super Bowl and the Buccaneers have that number one pick, you don't deal with a number two team. You don't deal with the number three or the number four. Until draft night, I'm talking about pre-draft trade, like the RG3 deal with Washington and the Rams, okay? That way you know for sure you're going to get your guy, because you can't give up two ones and two twos to the number two team, because the number one team, or the person that has the first draft pick, may take your guy. So,
right.
You know, it's key, if the Buccaneers are going to trade down, in my opinion, to do a trade before the draft happens. Obviously, they have to have that number one pick. And it's possible. There could be some sort of blockbuster deal. I've read that Mariota is going to end up with some grades from scouts between Andrew Luck and between RG3. Better than RG3, not as good as Andrew Luck, as far as where, you know, the number value they put on him as far as his total overall grade. And if that's the case, and the Buccaneers end up with that number one, it wouldn't surprise me if there were a few teams that certainly are very interested and they try and work out that deal. And as a general manager of a football team, the more draft picks you have, it's like having more
yep.
darts in a dart game. I mean, it just gives you more opportunity to score. But here's the deal. The Buccaneers may feel one of those two guys is their guy. And if that's the case, they're not going to budge. It doesn't matter what anybody offers. If they think Mariota is the savior of the franchise, they're going to stick to their guns and they're going to take him.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard that approach taken before. We saw us trade up. We heard Coach Morris say, predict that Josh Freeman would be our franchise quarterback, and he believed that. And
right.
That's not to say Josh didn't have the talent to do so, but he didn't become the franchise quarterback, and it is a bit of a crapshoot. But maybe Mariota's the guy. It's funny, Skip Brown in the chat room just said if they trade down to the 20s, he's going to need mental health counseling.
Skip already needs that. He's lost his mind, and you know, I may have to unfollow him on Facebook for a while because his
listen,
his Buccaneer posts are giving me an extra headache. I'm
yeah, but he's posting he's posting some good pictures on Facebook though. You need to
well,
make sure you keep an eye on it.
You guys, and I just saw it again. It popped up at the top of my news feed. Yeah, he's if you're on Facebook and friends with Skip, and even if you're not, look him up because he has probably the best picture of the day award. I give him that.
Yeah, that's a win. All right, listen, we got Mark Cook. I've already kept you longer than I had said I would. I know you've got a sick boy at home. Anything you need to update us on pewterreport.com, any events coming up, anything that they need to know with regards to the fun and frivolity that goes on with you and Scott Reynolds and crew?
We're just stumbling down the stretch like this football team right now, Derek, and I know you are, and I know you love your tailgates. But there'll be a certain satisfaction when you pack up that last tent right before you walk into the stadium against the Saints. You know, you'll get that breather, and I think, you know, I think us and pretty much any team, any writer, whether it's Roy or Rick or Greg or, you know, Rick Brown, any of these guys, you know, it's a long season, and we never thought this season would have anywhere near the drama of last year, and somehow it's managed to give it a run for its money. Certainly not as bad, but it's been a long season, and it wears on you, and of course, everybody's out there rolling their eyes saying, shut up, I got to be up at 5 a.m. tomorrow to catch a flight to Michigan or something. So, yeah, I know I watch football for a living and get paid, so I'm not really bitching as bad as it sounds like. But it is a long and grinding thing mentally on people. And, you know, it's as far as what we got coming up, you know, just our regular coverage, you know, we're gonna finish strong. Hey, we're going to be like the Buccaneers, you know. We're going to see who wants to be on the Pewter Report team the next 2 weeks. That's what we're going to do. Who wants to be back next
who
year?
Who really wants to be here? Yeah, exactly.
Right. Who really wants to be here? What are they going to put on tape for me?
Well, very nice. Well, Mark, I want to thank you again. For you guys who don't know how to follow Mark Cook, follow him at MarkCook1970, and you can also follow at Pewter Report on Twitter.
Follow me, and I tell people all the time, if you want football stuff, follow Pewter Report. Because if I'm tweeting about the Buccaneers, I'm always going to tweet on Pewter Report first, and occasionally I'll throw my 2 cents in on mine. Mine's just more nonsense and you know, sexual harassment and those kind of things. So,
all the things we come to expect.
Yeah, but no, we can follow me anywhere they want, but hopefully they'll follow us at Pewter Report. And also Facebook, you know, I haven't paid attention this year. I think we picked up 600 or 700 new followers.
Nice.
You know, this season on Facebook. We've kind of given up on it to a degree, but it seems to be picking up a little steam. So if people want to follow us on Facebook, they can do that too. We'd appreciate that.
Outstanding.
Most importantly, go to the website, pewterreport.com. Click on it. Click on the ads. Click on the stories. You don't even have to read them all. Just click on them.
Just
once
click
on them.
You clickbait, son of a bitch. I know. I like your style, and I like your move.
Don't even start on that, God. and there has been so many opportunities this year, and we just bow out of that. We're not going to fall into that.
It's all good. Well, I appreciate you taking time out, man. It has been a grueling season. We're still struggling through. We got people that are still coming to the tailgates. You know, it's not like you have to cover the first quarter anyway, and I know you're lazy, but you could drag your fat ass out to a tailgate and at least see some of your fans.
Yeah, first of all, I don't have any fans. Let's get that straight. Number two, because my wife and son aren't going to be there, so there's my only two fans. number two, you know, I'm out of shape. And, you know, we're going to work it out in the next year at some point. I'm either going to, you know, somebody's going to loan me a jazzy scooter, or maybe I'll steal one from an old guy tailgating, and I'll drive down there, or, you know, we'll steal one from the public's parking lot or something when we get our crab legs
nice.
To celebrate the Buccaneers drafting Jameis, and I'll have some transportation down there, but... I'm toting the computer bag, and I'm wearing high heels and shit. It's too hard.
You are such a sissy. All right. Well, I love you anyway. Thanks for calling in, Mark. I will talk to you, I'm sure, this weekend, and I will tweet at you probably during the game whilst I'm gnashing my teeth, as my father used to say.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it, man. Y'all take care. Thanks.
Take care, Mark. Mark Cook of PewterReport.com. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview. Went a little bit longer than I thought I was going to, but Mark and I end up chatting at any rate. I know we're at 10 o'clock. We're probably going to go till at least 10:30 tonight, folks. I appreciate everyone who's still in the chat room. You guys are troopers. The phone lines are now open. We have no more guests scheduled, so 813-964-7364 if you would like to participate in the show. What I would like to do at this point, though, is try and get loaded up some of the NFL Game Rewind film and go over a couple of these plays that I'm referring to when I discuss the very small difference between success and failure. Now, this is a non-trivial act that I have to perform to get this to work. You guys know this if you've been with the show for any period of time. This is a bit of magic, smoke and mirrors, all those sorts of things. I've now launched NFL Game Rewind. It's probably going to play loud music, so I apologize. I don't have enough resource in the form of production people to make this any better than... Oh, did I already mute this? I did. Wow, look at that. I was ahead of myself. All right, let's get the games pulled up here, and then I'll try and get everything working. We're going to go over a couple of plays from this last week's game in Carolina, O'Carolina. Let me get the plays set up and coaches' film set up. We will switch to coaches' film. And this coaches' film, by the way, is great. If you don't have it, I highly recommend you get it. Because it's very, very useful if you're trying to evaluate what's going on the football field. It's very tough to actually figure out what's going on without it. Let me see here. Chat roll. Going to get a preview here. That's what we got going. We'll transition over to that here in a second. And this looks like it may actually work, which is shocking to a certain extent. So, at any rate, I will transition here. Right now, it's just me. Mark Cook is no longer with us, so we'll go to that live window. And hopefully, not everything crashes when I start doing this. So, when you heard me bitching earlier about Michael Johnson, let me transition over here. See if this is working. This is the first play of the game. Watch your right defensive end, the bottom of the screen. Michael Johnson, his job is edge contain. They show action to the right. Look how far in this man goes. Where the play ends up doesn't really matter. We're going to watch this from behind the scenes now, which is one of the great things about Coach's Film. Right defensive end, Michael Johnson. Let me pause it. Oh, I can do some cool things now. Oh, this is going to be fun. Can I draw? I want to draw. Oh, I'm going to draw. We're going to telestrate some shit. We're going to telestrate some shit right now. This guy right here. That guy right there. Do you guys see that? I hope you do. Let me see what's up on Ustream right now. You do. You see it. This is all working. Holy cow. I cannot believe all of these things are coming together. Michael Johnson right here shows you one of the pieces. Now, and I know I'm calling out a very simple example, mind you. But what's going to happen is Michael Johnson on this play is going to crash down parallel to the line of scrimmage instead of taking an upfield path and setting an edge, which is what he's supposed to do. Now, I know flow is over here, but if they're really going to go full flow right, he cannot make this play anyway. It's predicated on him not making the play. What he should do is take a hard move upfield, and then once he sees the ball transition, then start. So you see, if he comes upfield the way I've drawn in the second line and then starts his pursuit, if the left side of the defensive line does their job, then the running back slows down and he can crash from behind. That's not what's going to happen here. We're going to clear all that bullshit drawing. We're going to play it for you. I can't play it in slow motion. That would be more dope. Michael Johnson comes off the ball. Sees, oh, my God, I got to get... Oh, look at that. Oh, Jesus Christ. There's no one over here. We got one poor cornerback who's just fucked out on an island. So there's one example of Michael Johnson and what edge contain means. You hear us talk about edge contain all the time. All the time we talk about this. Now, next play that I want to go into, 119 left in the first quarter. That's not really a good marker. Let me scroll down here, see if this works. Oh, this is a good one. Couldn't have been. Oh, it is. Here we go. All right, here's the next play later on in the game. Let's watch this play here. 119 left. Oh, wrong play. Dope. It was not Graham Gano. I actually wanted this one, I think. Sorry, guys. Again, we're trying to put all this shit together real time. This, I believe, is the tech stunt that pissed me off. Let me see if it is or if I fucked this up. Yep, it is. There we go. Now, you may not have seen that real time. And you guys probably remember what a tech stunt is because we talked about it a lot last year. Now, the play didn't hurt us because we had 16 guys around the one guy thrown to. Now, I'm going to pause this play right now. Now, what you see is we've got our normal defensive alignment. We've got our guys crowding the A-gap. A couple of things we've talked about repeatedly, and you've heard Steve and I talk about when we do analysis, is showing a double A-gap blitz. This is one of them. You see Danny Lansana? And this is another. We've got Levante David. They are in the A-gaps. They are scaring the living dog shit out of the center guard-guard combo. Because if they both come, they're fucked. Now, what happens here is, and what is typically the case, is we don't really send both of them. I think in this case we send Levante, and that's not enough. Now, what Michael Johnson does is instead of what he does later in the game, Later in the game, he actually makes a bull rush, a very sharp line straight at the quarterback, and it's very successful. He doesn't do that here. He lollygags up the field so slowly. I'm going to draw it as a ziggly line as best I can with this touchpad. He's so slow in making contact that our player in the zero technique position, which I think is Akeem Spence right here, starts to come to the outside in what looks to be an attempted tech stunt, a tackle end twist. But he gets to his spot so much earlier than Michael does, I don't think Michael even has contact made at that point. And then he just sort of loops back down here as if he's playing some sort of a shallow zone. This is not by design, folks. This is just straight up lazy shit. This is not good. So let's play this. I'll let you see this now unfold before your eyes. Danny backs out. Michael Johnson, no contact. Oh, sorry, my bad, Akeem here. I'll try and bat the ball down, which is never going to happen. If you're doing that, I don't need you on the field. Okay? It's literally that simple. I don't need you on the field anymore. All right. Next play that I want to talk about. On the zone blocking play that worked, let's talk a little bit about offense. The play that was responsible for most of our rushing success in this game, mind you. We will go to that play. We'll watch it real time, because this seems to work well. Real time, here's the play. We got our big position in here. We got two tight ends over there. You're going to see full flow left, zone block left, zone block left, cut back. Gotta go. Gotta go, says Dougie Martin. Now, sadly, he doesn't have that high-end speed to get all the way in the end zone, but it doesn't matter because we convert anyway. It was a great play, well blocked. All that stuff was good. Now, we're going to look at this from behind, and we're going to talk about zone blocking, okay? Because I want to show you where we screw up one block later on a play very similar that could have had a very similar result, talking about how fine the line is between success and failure. Now, what you'll see is all of the flow on this play, all of the flow is going to be going this way. Right? And they're going to be working their way through. Dougie's going to start it out that way. What's going to happen is he's going to see a crease, and then he's out the race. When we talk about zone blocking, what you heard in training camp was us talking about one cut and go. Because what's supposed to happen is as these blocks are occurring, you're going to find a seam. The back has to be very decisive in this setup. He puts his foot in the ground and he takes off. Now, there's no one left in the middle to block this play. But what you'll see is everyone doing their job. Every offensive lineman getting on their blocks. Block, block. There's the cut. Got to go. No one in the middle. Now, in stark contrast to that, we're going to go to 1:14 left in the first quarter. Here we go. Now, remember the play you just saw. Notice the alignment. We shift him over. Now we're strong. Going to the right, going to the right, going to the right. Oh, wait, I can't do anything. There's nowhere to go. This is a total zone block fail. This is what we've done very often this year. This wasn't exactly the play I wanted to show you. I wanted to show you a different play, but I've got that one too. This is a total fail in zone blocking. What you'll see is we've moved Amar Dotson over to the left-hand side. What you see is the right side of the line, including Luke Stocker, who is normally very, very good in blocking, gets completely crushed, giving Doug Martin nothing to work with. If it will play, that's what you'll see. All right. You're all screwed. Doug, you've got nowhere to go. You try and cut back. There's 16 guys there because EDS is already down the field, and he's having a conversation with Johnson. Now, the play that I wanted to show you, let me see in my notes here where the hell it is. Where is the one 18 missed his block? 31 left in the first quarter. Oh, it's the next play. Now, this is not out of the same position. It's not out of the same position or personnel grouping. But I want you to see what the difference is in one block. Out of shotgun. Hope this is the right play. I hope I took my notes right. If this is true, Lewis Murphy misses his block, and that's what ends his play. Now, you look at this play, and you think, oh, this is just a normal play. This is just a normal, shitty play. But I want to go a little bit closer. What's going to happen is you're going to see blocking that actually opens up the crease well. The front line does a good job of blocking. But Lewis Murphy, who's over here in the slot, has a responsibility. His job is to get here to the middle and catch whoever the robber is, whoever the free release guy is, because that's going to spring this play. This isn't on the offensive line. The offensive line does their job pretty well here. It doesn't look as cavernous as the first one. But if you'll see, I'll clear that shit out of the screen. Sorry. I hope you guys are enjoying this. I can't tell in the chat room right now because I got too many things going on. But hopefully this is useful to you. Watch how this play develops. Lewis Murphy from the slot. I'd like you to play. There we go. Lewis sees it. He sees it. Yeah, I got to get there. Ah, damn it. I didn't make my block. He got into the gap. Now, let's look at what we had there. I'm going to try and pause this. It's very hard on this computer with what's going on. I want to show what we got going on right before this happens. Damn it. You've got a safety coming in, but you've got Dougie open with safeties right there. He's got one guy misses that block. Yeah, it's not as cleanly blocked as the other one, but still. All right, what else do I want to show you? Offensively, you guys know that I think Josh McCown's better than Mike Glennon. I don't care if we want to argue that some more. We can. If someone wants to call in and argue, we do that. I got into a big Twitter fight with someone about that. That's not the point. That's not to say Josh McCown played well. He played very poorly in this game. And an example of why he's playing poorly, and I've got an example on defense of the team is doing this. It's not just Josh. It's not just a defensive player. What we're doing is we are telegraphing and locking. Right, this is something that Josh Freeman did a tremendous amount of his early years and then fell back into, and I think quarterbacks fall into when they're under fire. First play of the second quarter. Let's get over there. I'm very excited that we can do this. I think it's third and six right now. I think the play, the down distance is third and six, I believe. I think they'll tell us here. Yeah. Let me see. Yeah, third and six. So third and six. Besides the penmanship. Yeah, sorry. I'm using a touchpad. I need to go get another wireless mouse or whatever, or stylus. Sorry, guys. So third and six. Game, we're ahead. Things were moving along. Third and six is not that bad at down and distance. We're a little bit off of our down and distance, but still manageable. All right, let's see what we come out here. Let's see what the play looks like. All right, come out here in the shotgun. Got four receivers out there. One guy back to help. They're in a cover two shell. They got their linebackers up, crowding the line, showing pressure. Drop their cornerbacks back. Josh tries to throw it over to Vincent Jackson. He almost gets undercut, and it almost goes the other way for 6 points. It is a bad play. Now, why is it a bad play? Well, for a couple of reasons. One, he's fixated on Vincent Jackson. Now, his pre-snap read should tell him something. And I'm going to go back, actually, a little bit in time to show you what that looked like from the sky. This is your pre-snap read. Vincent Jackson is going to have zone. So he should be able to get open. But is he the guy you should be looking at? Right now he sees what looks to be press, or at least a redirect up on the top side. Your slot has got a linebacker staring at him. He's probably going to get bracketed. The one guy who no one's really got an eye on is right here. I think that's Cameron Brate in this case. It may not be. It may be the other random tight end whose name I always forget. But this is the guy. Now, when it comes to the route tree, I know this because I've watched this play. My man's going to run an easy little out route at the sticks, mind you. Now, Vincent also runs an out on the other side. I can't remember what the other players do. I believe this player clears out on the top side. But if Josh would just stop fixating on fucking Vincent Jackson and look at what he's got, he never looks to the right side of the field. This is something he did well in training camp, was he would survey the entire field. It was Myers. Thank you, Jimmy. No, the middle of the field. What do you mean the middle of the field? No. He doesn't go to the middle of the field. He breaks to the out. I don't know if that's what you're telling me about. But anyway, if he would at least check both sides of the field, which he used to do, and he's just not doing anymore, he would see that we have a great mismatch and a great opportunity for a very easy conversion. So let's go back here. You'll see the play from this side first. Quarterback falls back. Myers makes his break. He's open. It's over, right? And we make the bad throw to Vincent. Now, we'll look at this from the end zone cam to see what's going on. Myers gets a free release off the line. He's got, what is that, 11 yards of cushion, 12 yards of cushion, and we need six. There he goes. Now, you don't see it because we go over. Oh, what I wanted to show you was watch Josh's helmet. This is something I used to tell the guy that did our pictures back then. Watch the face mask of the quarterback. Here's your midline. Now, What is it that he actually does here? Does he even give anyone a hint that he's looking anywhere else? Here's your motion. Here's your snap. He's looking left, checking things out. Left, left, middle, left. He never even looks that way. This decision was made before the snap happened, and this is a problem. You cannot do that in this game. I love decisive, but you cannot do that. You absolutely can't. Now, when we come to predictability and we talk about those sorts of things, there's one more play that I want to talk about, and I hopefully this is not getting old for you guys because I really fucking dig looking at film. I really enjoy this. I wish I had more facilities to do it. 10:41 left in the fourth quarter. Yeah, this was when hope was fading. It's not 10:41 left, is it? Maybe it was. Yep. All right. Here's the play. This is about our defense being predictable. Now, you'll see us, we talk about rotating from two deep to single high. Here's the play. 16-10, they're up, they're driving. Now, we've rotated here. We showed two high. Now, we're rotating over to single high. What this is showing me, though, and this is the best view for it, the behind the center scene doesn't help us. Look at this over here. Okay, that's Greg Olsen. We kind of know he doesn't suck. Look at our linebacker alignment. They're going to be of no assistance here. Our safety, who's now rotated from this position to this position, is now out of the play. This play is over before it starts. DA sees it. There's the foot in the ground. It's open. It's pitch and catch. We schemed ourselves out of that. Anyway, we could do film review all day. I love that the stuff actually worked. Hopefully you were able to see that. And I actually transitioned back over to me, which is useful as well. But these are some of the things that are just killing me. Because that difference between one block made or paying attention to your pre-snap reads, this isn't catastrophic shit. This is stuff that you should be able to look at in the film room and make those changes and make those additions and change the outcome of the fucking game, guys. Quite literally. I was mentioning before Mark Cook called the things I thought we could be positive about. I think the defense is improving with guys who no one knows. Do I think it's the steel curtain? No, like I said with Mark. But it's improving. I think that when the running backs are given a chance, they're actually pretty damn good running backs. Jimmy, I didn't know I could download the All-22. If you can show me how to do that, I was trying to suck it all down so I could do markups and stuff, and I haven't been able to do that. So drop me an email on the best way to do that so I can mark these things up in advance. I'd appreciate that. The other one to be excited about is Mike Evans. Mike Evans is a beast. We've got to have him back as a beast next year, but the kid is just stupendous. Things to be negative about, execution on offense is just terrible. The poor QB play, regardless of who the QB is, including Josh at this point, and no conversions. Our third down conversions are terrible. Swords and Skulls, if you guys have Swords and Skulls, drop them in the chat room right now. We'll cover them. And predictive MVPs for the Packers game. I do not think Aaron Rodgers can come down here and drop 56 on us, though he is certainly capable of it. I do think that our defense will stand up a bit. Fish, there are some apps that will allow you to take video once you have a local copy and convert them into an animated GIF. You play them in the player. I think one of them is called Replay Media Catcher. But you can Google that one. That's not that tough. So Swords and Skulls were hard for me. Real time in Charlotte, and I know that it's late. I know that we've gone late, so I apologize, and I appreciate everyone who's still here watching and listening and all that sort of stuff, and certainly appreciate you guys supporting What the Buck and all the things that we do. Charlotte's a great city to go watch football in. Great beer, great drinks, great downtown. No one seems to be there, but the game day experience is tremendous. The fans were very, very nice. Would have been better to get a win, obviously. The roughing the passer penalty, which was so instrumental in Larry English, that was bullshit. Even the fans there got it. I was hard-pressed to come up with anyone to give a sword to. I looked at the stats, and I thought, oh, McDougal got a lot of tackles, but I didn't really care for his play. Levante David played okay. But no one stood out to me enough to get a sword. And so I'm not going to give one. I'm just not going to. Mighty Murray, maybe. I don't know. But I'm not going to give one. Sword to Logan Mankins. Look at that. graded out pretty well this week, huh? But I don't want to give it to the offensive line just on purpose. Sort of. Cousins. Nice. He did grade out well this week. The skull was equally tough. I don't think that anyone stood out past Michael Johnson, because I think Michael Johnson is now going to receive the skull for the rest of the year as long as he plays. Now, the people we're going to give predictive MVPs to, or I'm going to give predictive MVPs to on offense, are as follows against the Packers. If I ruled the world, if I were running this ship, as it were, I would look at the fact that we're that close on running, and I would plan to run. I don't give a shit what defense we're running against. The best way to get things started is to simplify. And I know that you guys don't like that. I know people want to throw the ball all over the field. The long snapper. What's his name? I love it. And so I think we're going to see a good game by Doug Martin. I think we're going to see a solid game by Doug Martin. I have no idea why my computer just made that sound, by the way. Very interesting. Hopefully it hasn't interrupted anything. Skull to the groundskeeper. Nice. But I'm going with Doug Martin on the offensive side of the ball. And I'm going to go with Jonathan Banks on the defensive side of the ball, because I think that he's going to have to come up big. I think that the secondary in general is, with the linebackers helping out, your back side, we're going to have to get some deflections. We're going to have to take some of those things that are so close. The Lemon interception that wasn't. The tip that wasn't an interception. McDougal in perfect position on Greg Olsen with a chance to make an interception that he can't make. Our guys have got to find the ball. We had a number of places where our guys actually went into man coverage, which no one talks about. If you can't cover man, we got a fucking problem, guys. We're talking about tight ends running around. Hell, Kelvin Benjamin ran for 15 yards across the field. There was no mystery what was going on. It's not that he's that fast. Just cover his ass. He wouldn't do anything fancy. There were only two guys out on the route. Jonathan, Werner, these guys have got to get that job done. Got to get it done. Just until we're behind by 10, because after that, Martin would park for Sims. Yeah, well, I know. I can keep hoping that they're going to do something. And to be honest, Sims made the move on Kuechly that everyone's excited about. Sims looked pretty good a couple times with the runs. I don't really care who the running back is. I think Dougie's running hard. I think Sims can run hard. I think James can run hard. I think these guys have all got some talent. But I think the running game is going to be the secret, and I think that I'm going to pull Doug Martin out of there. So I'm not sure what your thoughts are, guys, but I really do appreciate you coming out. If you're coming out to the tailgate, let me know. We're going to have a great time out there. Looking forward to having some great barbecue, collecting some money for What the Buck Really Matters. I believe that our charity this month is Alex's Bikes for Kids, but I would not swear to that, because I know they I think, have wrapped up some of their collections because of how close to the Christmas time we are. But I'll get with Cheryl, let you guys know who that's going on to. We're going to try and award that spring check next week when I get back from my work trip, and we'll send some pictures out about that. Big shout out to Car Credit, Pewter Partner. What the Buck Really Matters was awarded their second ever $500 charity grant. So big thanks to them. And when we tweet that stuff, we have a chance. We're in the running for a $2,000 award as well. So if we tweet that stuff out, guys, that means a lot. We really do this for the love of the game and for the love of the charities we support. We've got a crew of about 30-plus people who bust their ass to make those things happen, and we've done some pretty impressive things. We're going to put out an infographic at the end of the year to let you know what your contribution to what we do, whether it's in buying shirts or coming to the tailgates or participating in our food drives, our peanut butter drives, our jeans drives, what that has done for our local community and beyond. It is really pretty amazing what this group of people have gotten together to do. I am proud to be a member of this family. And despite the fact that my team is not doing particularly well, I'm still proud to be a Bucks fan, and I hope that we're able to turn these things around. Herm Edwards is right. You play to win the game. To hell with sucking for the Duck. I don't know that the Duck is that good. If we can get 2 ones and 2 twos, I am absolutely in. So thanks again. Until next time, which should be next week, I will see you guys later. It looks like what happened was Windows Media crashed. Imagine that. So. With that being said, I can now launch it again. Slowly. Because I double-clicked it. I just had it pointed out to me that next Wednesday was Christmas Eve, so there will not be a show next weekend, or next Wednesday. We will figure out a time to do a show next week, but it will not be on Christmas Eve, because that would lose me half of my shit, and I would like to not lose half of my shit. So please do keep tuned to our Twitter feed at What the Buck, or our Facebook page, or any of those sorts of things, and we will let you know when we're going to do a show and how we're going to do a show and all those sorts of things. But it will not be Wednesday. Anyway, we're going to open this with Windows Media so this doesn't blow your ears out, because that was obnoxious. Sorry about that, guys. See you somehow next week. Herm Edwards said the Bucks would be in the playoffs this year. He was still right about that. How about sucking to have the number one pick and all the firepower? I don't think he's all the firepower, baby. I don't think he's the salvation, baby.
So I give zero.